Matthew chapter number 7.
Matthew chapter number 7. In the ministry of Christ, of course, we have been looking at this glorious, famous, wonderful sermon that has been preached by Christ. We have continued on Sunday mornings and find ourselves many months ahead, if you will, in the ministry of Christ from this point. We have lingered here in the 5th, 6th, and 7th chapter on Sunday evenings because this sermon is such an important part, it seems, of His ministry. Such an important part still today of teaching us what it is or what it means to be one of His followers, one of His disciples. Teaching us what it means to be a Christian. And as we started off in this study and looking at this sermon, one of the catchphrases we used was Christian counterculture. And by that we meant that it teaches us, and Christ was teaching them, to be different from the world, being different from religion, being different from everything they had ever known, and to be a follower of Him truly and of Him only. But that is still what we are to be about today. And the portion that we will cover tonight will reinforce that. In the conclusion of the sermon, Christ is tying things up. He is bringing things together. He is emphasizing things that have carried through the entirety of this sermon, and that is one of the points. Be different. Be different from the rest of the world and the rest of religion. You know, in society today especially, and it probably was this way too to some degree back then, we are expected to tolerate and to accept everybody's idea of religion or lifestyle or morality. The way where we are in our country today, we are expected to do that. There is no basis today for or a standard of behavior, a standard of living, a standard, you know, of morality anymore. And so we are expected just to tolerate, just to, you know, accept as a viable option anything that anybody wants to do at any time. That's what we're expected to do. But the preaching of Christ in this sermon is opposite to that. And He will highlight that in a great way tonight because He will say, there is one way that is like this, don't be that way. And we should take a lesson from that tonight to know that there is a way that is wrong. There is a way of man that seemeth right to him, but it leads to destruction. And so therefore we are not to accept or tolerate just anything that the world wants to do, anything that our children want to do, anything that our families want to do. There's been too much tolerance in our lives, in our country today. And I think over the course of time, Christians have been exceedingly tolerant when they should not have been. How are we to be tolerant of a religion that, you know, like Islam, that condones so much of what the Bible says is wrong? How are we to tolerate that kind of religion? How are we to tolerate the, you know, killing of babies and the marrying of two sexes together? How are we to tolerate those things? The world says we should. The world says, what right do you have to speak out against them? The right we have is before us in the Scriptures today. That's exactly what we need to be doing. And He highlights that here. If you look in Matthew 7, here in verse number 13, just verse 13 and 14 to begin with tonight. Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. In these two short verses, Christ presents to us two ways, two gates, two paths, and two ends. He says a whole lot in just two short verses, more than we are going to get into tonight. There's a depth of teaching here when you begin to compare what it meant to, you know, have a gate in a city in their time and the importance that they were and the main gates and the other gates. And they were able to draw a picture from that here, even the paths and the ways and those kinds of things. We're not going to get into all of that imagery tonight. We're going to keep it a little more basic than that and try to just see the truth, the simple truth that Christ is presenting to us here about these two ways that are contrasted. It's a whole lot like Psalm chapter 1, where in the first three verses He said, "Blessed is the man, basically, that seeks after Me, and woe unto him that does not." And really, that is what is at the heart of what He teaches to them here. These two ways are presented before us in this passage, and they still exist today. There are two ways before us, two paths to walk down. And now those two paths are divided before us as those, or that which seeks, honors, and glorifies God, and then everything else is over on the other side. Everything else is on the other path. And while there might be a thousand different ways that people are, you know, taking that path and directions they're going, they're all on the same road. They're all walking the same path. These gates and these paths, as Christ mentions them here in verse 13 and 14, understand they're not talking about salvation. Much like Brother John talked about this morning in Sunday school class. They're not talking about a person being able to choose the right path, walk that path all their life, and enter in at the gate of heaven, right, and saved, and all that kind of stuff into eternal life. That's not what the picture is being presented here. Overall, in the Sermon on the Mount, it is not in what we would consider a salvation-type message, not an evangelical message. Though certainly it bears Christ and shows the extremity of man and his need and shows Christ in many ways, but that wasn't His point. In other words, He wasn't preaching the gospel to them here, but He was instructing those that are already saved. And so it is with that basis we come to these verses. Preaching to people that had been already saved, already been made one of His. And He gives to them an illustration. An illustration in the terms of narrow and wide, of straight and broad. Giving them this imagery, making them to understand the difference between a skinny footpath, just throw that out there tonight, that might be worn between, you know, the house and the well and back. Just wide enough for a person to walk down, get to where they're going, come back. Contrast that with what we might think of as like a 6-lane superhighway today. You know, extremely broad, extremely wide, enough to fit many people, very comfortable, and a passageway that presents a lot of ability to variate. A lot of ability to go this direction and that direction and get turned this way and get turned that way. When you contrast the two, it is a very different picture that is presented. And that is true still today for those that are walking the straight and narrow path as opposed to those that are walking along the broad way and that are doing the things that are right in their own eyes. If you turn over quickly with me to Joshua chapter number 1, I think a good illustration of this is seen here in Joshua as he receives instruction before they head into the Promised Land, as he was taking over for the great leader Moses. We find Joshua being encouraged not to be afraid, to take heart, not to be dismayed at the great task that was before him. And the instruction that he is given really is similar to what we read of here in these two verses in the Sermon on the Mount. Perhaps Christ had this teaching in mind and the connection here. But here in verse 6 of chapter 1 of Joshua, he says, "Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land, which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law, which Moses, my servant, commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. The book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, then thou shalt have good success." We see in verse number 7 that Joshua is instructed to what? Not to turn to the right or to the left, but he was to stay on the path that the law laid out before him. And that was a narrow path. That was a footpath. That was laid out before Him, and there was no ability to variate, no ability to step to the left, to step to the right, to say, okay, I'm going to keep moving in this direction, but let's go off on this angle, or let's go off on this angle and try this way out. Let's just change things up a little bit. When one is on the straight and narrow path, they are putting one foot in front of the other, walking towards Jesus Christ, and they are living a God-honoring, God-centered life, seeking after Him and Him alone. And Christ is telling them, here, walk on that path in your life. Choose that path. And understand that Christ is putting before them a choice. Saying, you don't have to be on the broad path. You don't have to be on that way. But choose. Choose to walk on this path that is narrow, that is straight, where you are not going to depart to the left or to the right, but focus on Me and come to Me. And when you do that, all the other things of life fall to the wayside and are far less important. You don't make idols out of sports and idols out of possessions and idols out of money and idols out of all the other things of life, but you're focused and your feet are moving towards Christ. Your life is going towards Christ in a concerted direction. You're leading your family in that way. You're not going to the left or to the right. There's not enough room. If you're concerned about Christ and Christ alone, if you're concerned about honoring what God has said in this book, there is no room to turn to the left. There is no room to turn to the right. All you can do is go straight ahead. This book constrains us if we're on that path. And that is a choice we must make. You can't make that choice until you've been saved by the grace of God. You can try all you want. You can get on that path for maybe a step or two, and then you'll be back into the ways of the world. But once you've been saved, you have a choice you can make. You can choose to get in the book and to head towards Christ with all that you've got. And you can walk that path. You can stay on it. At times in the flesh, you know, the flesh rebels and the flesh says, this is no fun. I want to get back into the world and get back into those things. There may be times that we stumble and fall and we, for a short time, step off of that path. When that happens, we need to get right back on. He's presenting to them a narrow way in that they don't have the ability to choose and to go to the right or to the left. Their lives pointed at Him, moving towards Him always. Now, conversely, the broad path, if you picture, like we said, a six-lane superhighway, you know, you can find yourself with plenty of room. Plenty of room to choose how to go, where to go, what to do. I mean, there's not even always the right direction. You just sort of move. You're moving forward, moving backward, moving to the right. Let's see what's over here. Let's go over there. And your life is just in a place of confusion. Not having any meaning, not having much purpose. And sadly today, and some wouldn't apply these verses in this way, but sadly today, there's a lot of Christians that are on that path. They have left their first love, they have left giving their all to Christ, and instead they're kind of wandering around. Instead of making a straight line towards Christ on that narrow path, they're kind of zigzagging around life. They're kind of going back and forth and back and forth from one side of the road to the other side of the road. Well, this looks good over here. Well, there's something shiny over here. Let's go check it out. And this sounds good over here. That's the broad path living. Christ says, don't choose that way. Don't walk that path. Though to the flesh it makes sense, though to the flesh it seems like, man, look at all this room we've got. We can do as we want. But those that are walking on the broad path, their lives are not focused on Christ. They're not moving towards Him in a concerted fashion and leaving all the rest behind. Instead, they're making idols out of those things they're turning aside to see. They're doing the opposite of Joshua. They're turning aside this way and that way. Oh, their life overall may be making inches in their steps toward Christ, maybe little by little by little. But oh, how much faster, how much more glory we bring to Him as we're on that narrow path and going very quickly and purposefully towards Him. That's how we need to be moving through this life. Making decisions, ordering our life in such a way that the distractions are kept to a minimum, making sure that the things that we own don't own us, making sure that we're not wasting the time that God has given us in this life, in this world. Especially, and I know I mentioned it already, but especially as we lead our families. As fathers, as we make decisions for our families to be on one of these two paths, you're not just choosing for you, but you're choosing for your family. You don't want your kids wandering around out on that broad path, but lead them to Christ. Take them on that straight and narrow way and stop zigzagging through life. If you're still there in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 5, verse 32, kind of presents the same imagery. Deuteronomy 5, 32, ye shall observe. Deuteronomy 5, 32, ye shall observe to do therefore as the Lord your God hath commanded you. Ye shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. He says, you shall not depart from that path. In verse 33, you shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God hath commanded you, that you may live, that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which ye shall possess. I mean, doesn't that make good sense? Brother John mentioned in Sunday school this morning again, we know what to do. It's not like we have trouble identifying the narrow path, the narrow way. Oh, it distinguishes itself very easily. We know that path. We know we should be on it. And there are times in our life when we get on it and we walk for a good while, long stretch. And then something gets to us and we get off and we start kind of roaming around and getting off into the broad way. As we turn back to Matthew chapter 7, we notice the difference between wide and narrow, showing us that you don't get lost on the narrow way, you get to Christ. On the broad way, you're going to have distractions, you're going to have speed bumps, you're going to spend or waste a lot of time on other things. Kind of goes back to that thought about that which is common and that which is uncommon. Those things that are on the broad path that distract us aren't always sinful. They aren't always evil, they aren't always wicked. But are they taking us closer to Christ? Are they on the narrow way? Or are we allowing ourselves to be distracted, kind of wandering around? But I want you to also see here not only the difference between wide or narrow and wide, but notice here in verse number 13 and 14 the difference between many and few. The difference between many and few, because those that are on the narrow way are seen as a comparative few that walk therein. Not everybody is going to be on the narrow way. Not everybody is going to choose to walk that path. Sadly, not even all of God's people walk that path. It's not going to be as crowded as we would maybe like it to see it. But we need to understand that even though there are more people on the broad path, even though there might be people we love and have some respect for, people we see as good church members, people we see as good preachers, people that we have esteem for us to look and say, well, they're over there, let me go over there too. We're using the wrong judge. We're using the wrong standard. The standard is Christ, taking us closer to Him on that narrow way. Not what others are doing. If everyone's doing it, and we try to teach our children this, if everyone's doing it, then it's probably something we are or shouldn't be involved in. And that's a good lesson for our children, but it's a good lesson for us too. Just because everyone's doing it, even if it's not sinful, that means it's common, and is it taking us closer to Christ? When we are on this path, our steps are directed by the Lord, even though it may be few. Don't get discouraged at the lack of people on the narrow way. That's easy to do. It's easy to look around and say, there's not many people on this path. Well, no, if you've ever been lost, no man here probably would claim that they've ever been lost. But you know, when you don't know where you're going, you kind of look for others that may be able to take you where you're going. You're going around a detour and you don't want to take the actual detour that's marked. You want to find it yourself. You try to find someone that looks like they know where they're going. You want to follow them. And if you're all by yourself and you're kind of trying to figure it out, you kind of wonder, am I going the right way? Am I doing the right thing? And you begin to second guess, you begin to question, maybe I should be over there. And that's how it is with this narrow and broad comparison. We look around in our families and we say, well, everyone else is, you know, kind of doing their own thing or out on that Broadway. I don't have much company here. I don't have many people to gather around me. I don't have much encouragement. But be encouraged, because the place where you are, the path that you are on, it's leading you to the Lord. Look at Proverbs chapter 3. This is a familiar verse, but it gets misapplied. Proverbs chapter 3, we read here in verses 5 and 6. When we're on this straight and narrow way, we're constrained, our lives will be cleaner, our lives will be pure, our lives will be more godly. We will be making progress daily to Jesus Christ. It is better for us, it is more glorifying to Him. But here in Proverbs 3:5, trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him. He shall direct thy paths. Now, some people believe this verse to say, you choose which way to go, acknowledge God in it, and He will make straight the path, or He will direct your steps. That's not what this is saying. This is saying that we need to trust the Lord, not to look to ourselves, but trust the Lord, be on the right path towards Him, acknowledging Him with everything that we are, everything that we have, every decision we make, desirous to be in His will on that narrow path. And then we have the promise that He shall direct our steps, that He will give us the grace and the strength to remain on that narrow way, to get on it, stay on it, and be faithful in it. That's when you can claim the promise that God will direct my steps. But if you choose, if you make a willing choice to say, I'm going to go over on this Broadway, God, you know, direct my steps over here, you don't have that promise. In a sense, you're going to be on your own as you go over that way. And like the children of Israel wandering in the wilderness, you're going to be wandering on that broad path. You ever feel like you're lost in life, don't know which way to go? That's not God's design. That's not what God desires for your life. He doesn't want you to be, you know, befuddled by, you know, where you're at in life and what to do. Get on that narrow way. I'm not saying that there won't be hard decisions and that there won't be difficult times where you need to seek His face. But what I'm saying is you'll be moving in a constant direction towards Him. And that is always the best. The world is walking on the broad path, filled with common pursuits. Sadly, far too often we're on it with them. He's called us, come out from among them, be ye separate. Step off of that broad way and walk on the narrow path. Be different. And then we notice also here in Matthew 7, not only the difference between wide and narrow, the difference between many and few, but notice again in verse number 13 and 14 the difference between destruction and life. The difference between destruction and life. He's not talking about salvation. So we have already mentioned. But the end of these paths is different. One leading to life, the other to destruction. When we willingly walk on the broad path, we are willingly giving up the blessings of God, the rewards of God, all of those things that will fill eternity for us and with us as we worship Him. That's what we're doing. We're willingly taking a step off, we're willingly getting into the broad path, and we're willingly saying, God, I don't want those things. And some of that is, of course, millennial reign. Some of that is further on in eternity in heaven. All of those things that we will receive, not to glorify ourselves, but to glorify Him. And so if we walk the broad way, there's going to be destruction. And that the word destruction It doesn't always mean annihilation or to be obliterated. What it means is loss. There will be loss. And we will experience that. For all the miles that we've walked on the broad path, we will experience loss. And that will be disappointing when we get to that judgment seat of Christ. That those things were so, and that we weren't stronger, that we weren't more faithful in walking the narrow way that led us to Christ. We'll receive blessing and glory being on the narrow way. And it leads to life. And many of those things we read about as we studied Revelation. Partaking of the tree of life and all the leaves of healing and blessing for the nations and those wonderful, beautiful pictures that were there, we'll experience. And eternity will be different for each one. We will receive or lose reward. We won't turn to it tonight, but Matthew 24, the end of the chapter, around verse 51, there is a parable sort of spoken about, a servant that wasn't faithful to his master. And when his master returns and he finds him unfaithful, he punishes him. He says there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. There will be destruction. But that verse isn't talking about casting someone into hell. He's a servant. He's saved. He is one of His. And so He's telling them there will be loss. There will be loss when we get to that great white throne, or to the judgment seat of Christ. Understand that walking the narrow way leads to blessing. Walking the broad way leads to loss. And those are just three ways we can contrast the two paths that Christ talks about here. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at these and say, which one is the better one? Which one should I be on? Which one should I be walking on and living on and patterning my life after? So we need to do it. We need to be careful that we don't get off. Now look back with me to Matthew 7. If you're not there, turn back there in verse 15. After talking about these two ways, after talking about these two ends, these two paths, He goes on beginning in verse 15 to warn them concerning those that are on the broad way, but will come around and try to deceive you into thinking they're on the narrow way. Read here, "Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth forth not good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore by their fruits ye shall know them." But wait a minute! We're not supposed to judge. So a lot of people would say. Say, I know what Matthew 7:1 says. Don't judge me! But Jesus Christ here says, you have to judge. You have to discern what people are about. You have to discern by their fruits the path that they are on. And this has been an issue for every church of every generation that's ever existed. It has been an issue because there are always going to be those that appear to be sheep, that appear to be true prophets or preachers of the Word of God. There are always going to be those that look the part. But all they desire is to get close to the flock to devour, to destroy, and to wreak havoc. You don't have to think back very far in your own mind to know some that have crept in unawares even to this body and have desired to do those things and have even at times been somewhat successful. And so He's warning them, He's telling them, make sure that you try the spirits, make sure that you look at the fruits, make sure that you're doing everything you can to keep out the wolves, keep them out. Now understand there's a distinction here, I believe, between goats, sheep, and wolves. There are goats, and goats are those that are lost. Come into the services. They desire maybe just to be a part of something. They hear the word preached. They might come back again. They might not. There are occasions when goats get added to the body. They don't have any ill harm intended. They don't have any, you know, ill will intended. It's just a product of the flesh or of emotion maybe. They say, I want to be baptized, and maybe they haven't been saved. But their desire isn't to harm. Their desire isn't to wreak havoc. They'll cause problems because that's what goats do. But a step further than that, there are some that are wolves, and wolves only have one nature, and that is to destroy, and that is what their desire is. And so we must always be as careful as possible to make sure that we do not willingly allow those that would devour to come in among the sheep. He says in verse 16, "Ye shall know them by their fruits." Verse 20, "Wherefore by their fruits ye shall know them." And he gives the example of a tree. He says a tree that is evil or a tree that is diseased, a tree that is bad, it will not bring forth something good. And there have been some over the course of time, even some well-intentioned pastors, that have said, well, it would be better for them to come into the flock so that they could learn. So that they could, you know, try to understand. You know, it would be better for them to do that. But this verse tells us that an evil tree, a bad tree, one that's diseased, one that's corrupt, will not bring forth any good fruit, and therefore will not do any good. And so it may seem harsh at times, but we must always be in the fruit inspecting business. We must always be looking. There have been times in the past, even in my remembrances in our fellowship, when men have been rushed into the pulpit or rushed into the fellowship, been trusted with preaching, and they have wreaked havoc with the things that they have said and the things that they have preached. Men that were preached around in many places and then got up and preached things like universal church and done a lot more damage than they ever did any good. Just desiring to devour and to rip apart. So we must be in the fruit inspecting business. As a church, we must always insist that there be fruit when one comes desiring to be a part, to be made a member of the body. Whether they have already had scriptural baptism or not, we must insist that there's fruit. Part of that fruit is they're willing to give a testimony of salvation, and that testimony is that Christ died for them, rose again, and that's what they're trusting in for their salvation. Part of that fruit is that they have a desire to unite with the body, either by letter, statement, or baptism. And they are showing forth some kind of desire to be faithful, a desire and a good spirit to be a part of the body. It always makes me nervous when people come around and they want to debate everything the church believes. I don't have a problem with telling anybody what I or this church believes and stands for. And we should never have any problem with that, and we'll back it up with Scripture, and we'll believe it and stand for it. But the Lord is truly adding somebody to this body. He gives them the spirit of submission, the spirit of cooperation. He doesn't bring them in so that they can debate, so that they can make waves, so that they can, you know, stir everybody up. That's not the purpose of church membership. If we are tolerant, if we open up our membership without qualification, then we are going to have wolves among the sheep. We're going to destroy the body. How serious it is. And we forget that sometimes because we're not always tested by it. You don't always see that testing. The pastor heads off a lot of that before it ever reaches, you know, general knowledge. But we must ensure to the best of our ability that the wolves stay out. Because the truth is, even at the best, even trying our very best, there are sometimes when they sneak through. Sometimes when we are deceived. And Christ says, do everything you can. Do everything you can. Judge them by the fruits. It's a measure of protection given to us as a body and a measure of protection that we must utilize to make sure that we are not bringing those wolves in among the sheep. And this even has, you know, even a broader application to our own lives. Be careful who you trust. Be careful who you invite into your life, you know, whether it's personally or whether it's by recording, listening to, or books you read after and things of that nature. Be careful. be careful and understand that it's by their fruit you shall know really what they believe and what they practice and those kinds of things. We shouldn't be quick just to accept people must discern. And that's where this is not a popular message today. If two men or two women walk in today that are in a homosexual relationship, the world would expect us to tolerate it. But they would be wolves among sheep's clothing. They can listen, they can hear the preaching, and if God would work in their heart, they could be a member of this church, but they would have to renounce those things, having been worked on by the Spirit. Instead of bringing them in and trying to change them or whatever, they need to prove themselves first. When I was a young man in the ministry, I didn't understand that. It's a hard lesson for a young man in the ministry to understand that you got to prove. You got to prove that you've been truly called. You got to prove that you truly are, you know, a God-called man. And even though you don't know everything in the world, certainly, that your desire is to preach the truth, not to harm anybody, not to do any church a disservice, but you stay faithful with the stuff. And that can only be proved by time. But mark them. Know them. And even if it creates a stir, creates a problem, if they are proven to be a bad tree, they are proven to be a wolf, stand against them. Keep them out. There would be many over the course of the next few months and years in the ministry of Christ and His disciples that would try that. That would want to be a part for the sake of being a part, but they didn't have the best interest in mind. They were wolves. You know, even Paul, when he was saying his goodbyes to the Ephesians, he says, "My heart is sorry that he has to leave." He says, "I'm burdened for you because I know that after my departing, grievous wolves will come in." He says, "I know that that's what's going to happen. It's what's going to take place." So you got to make sure we guard always against those things. Take it seriously because it's serious business that we are called to do, and realize that it's not carried out in the spirit of hatefulness. We should always be compassionate. Because unless it were the grace of God, we'd be right there with them in whatever sin they might be taking in. Our desire might be the same. So realize that as Christ contrasts these two ways, He's talking about the path that we should tread, should always be looking for. And realize that people might say they're on that path, but the only way you can really know is by watching what they do and seeing their fruit. Don't be deceived. Let's stand.